理课堂听 class.com
Studio Classroom is on the air. Today and tomorrow, we're going to find out how one person can make a difference. Welcome, everyone, to Studio Classroom. This is your advanced program, and my name is Troy Peterson, your host on today's program. And today we're talking about an issue surrounding psychology. And the title of today's article is You Count, or Three Ways to Make a Difference. With me in the studio today are two of our co-hosts, Esther and Amy. Hi, ladies.
Hi, this is Esther. Glad to be here. And you know what? We are important. We make a difference.
We do. And in fact, that's what we're looking at today, that one person can make a difference. Hi, Amy.
Hi, everyone. This is a very good article to be teaching, I think. I'm excited to be here to talk to you about it.
And so we're going to look at a story that is related to us by the author of the article. His name is Victor Perakin, and he talks to us about the difference that one person can make. Now, in the title of today's article, You Count, what do we mean by that when we use that phrase, you count?
Well, we don't mean counting like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You count, in this case, means you're important, you matter.
Mm-hmm. And we have other idioms or idiomatic phrases using the word count, such as to count up or to count down. But in this case, we're talking about that a person is important. You count. And sometimes we actually use that phrase to encourage a person, wouldn't we?
Mm-hmm. And we also say, you can make a difference. You make an impact. You can make an impression on someone else's life.
Right. And sometimes that is also another phrase we might use to encourage someone to say, hey, go out there. You can make a difference. You can do it. What do most people think they can't do?
I think most people think that they cannot make a difference. Usually you'll hear people say, well, I'm just one person. What does it matter what I do?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you can't accept yourself, then you usually don't think you can make a difference. So I think the first step is to accept yourself.
That's right. I think that's a very important point, and maybe we will find that in today's article. Well, let's begin then with today's reading. And if you have your Advance magazine, please turn to page 25, and we will begin the reading at the top of column 1 to the end of that column.
You count. Three ways to make a difference. What can one person do? A lot. One person acting out of compassion and wisdom can make a great difference. One person has the ability to become a powerful instrument of hope, encouragement, motivation, and inspiration to another who is struggling. One person can make the difference between despair and hope, between giving up and going on, between falling apart and rising up. The fact is, you count. Here are three ways to make a difference.
All right, before we look at those three ways, let's just look then at the first paragraph of our article. It says, one person acting out of compassion and wisdom can make a great difference. We know that people often do acts of kindness because they are compassionate, or they have a sense of compassion toward other people. But there's another word that's used here as well, wisdom. And what is wisdom anyway?
It is being wise. It is doing what you think will make a difference. Doing what you've done before and you know is right.
Okay. Now, do wise people also, are they also people of knowledge?
They can be.
Okay. I would think that maybe wisdom is the application, the correct application of knowledge. There are people who have knowledge concerning issues, or they understand a situation, but they don't know how to make a difference. They don't know how to apply that knowledge to bring change. And I think what we find here is that when we act out of compassion, we're not just scattering our effort, but we're focusing our effort to do a particular act of compassion that is based on the best decision. So I think compassion and wisdom need to go together to make a difference. And I think we've seen that acted out in life in many situations where people looked at conditions or situations and they thought, now how can I make a difference? These children over here in this section of our country or perhaps in this particular location, they're suffering. They don't have enough food. Their education is poor. They don't have enough clothes to wear. Their parents are at a very low income level. So how can I make a difference in that situation? Well, just feeling compassion isn't enough. You also need to know how to change that situation by doing the right thing. And I think that takes wisdom.
And it doesn't always take a group to make a difference. One person can make a difference. As we see in line 17, it says, one person has ability to become a powerful instrument of hope, encouragement, motivation, and inspiration to another person.
Hmm. We see here in line 4 the word powerful instrument. And it's talking about a person, Amy. When we think of an instrument, usually we think of a musical instrument that someone would play. But can people also be instruments?
Yes, they can. And the term instrument also can be used to mean a tool or something that's used for a certain purpose. Mm-hmm. For instance, you know, you might have medical instruments that you use in practicing medicine. And so here, if you're saying that a person is an instrument of something, that means that that person is accomplishing a purpose, a particular mm-hmm. purpose. And here, that purpose is to bring hope and encouragement and so forth to someone who is struggling.
Okay. In fact, we have several nouns listed there. That person is a powerful instrument of hope, encouragement, motivation. Inspiration, it says, to another who is struggling. Can you think of anyone in your life who became that an instrument to you when you needed hope?
My teachers in high school were inspirations to me. They told me that I could do it, that I could become who I wanted to become. They encouraged me when I felt down.
Hmm.
They gave me self-esteem, or they encouraged me when I felt like I had no self-esteem.
Mm-hmm. Amy, is that true for you too?
Yes, I've been blessed to have a number of people in my life who inspired me and encouraged me and so forth just by recognizing gifts that I had or, you know, helping me to realize things about myself that I didn't realize before.
And I can say that that's true for me as well. People who saw something good in me that I didn't realize was there or certain abilities, and so the person would encourage me to use those abilities. So we need to encourage one another to tell people, hey, you count. You can make a difference. Well, we read on in line 20, actually in the first column, if you're down that far, it says one person can make the difference between despair and hope. And actually, there are several parallelisms, we would call them, mm-hmm. that are used here. On the one hand, he says despair over against hope. On the one hand, giving up over against going on and so forth. What is he trying to tell us here? What is despair versus hope? What happens when a person is feeling despair?
Well, he's kind of contrasting opposites here. You know, as you said, they're parallels. And I think despair is kind of the feeling that, you know, that, oh, I can't go on. Everything's terrible. Things will not get better. But then hope is the opposite of that, because hope is looking to the future and saying things will get better. Something good will come.
Mm-hmm.
And between giving up and going on, when you give up on something, you just decide that you're not going to work towards it, you're not going to put any more time or effort in it. And if you keep going on, you spend time and you're willing to keep doing it.
All right, so giving up is the opposite of going on. And what about the next one, falling apart and rising up, Amy?
Well, to fall apart, you know, we can use that if we're talking about a machine or a car or something that just kind of means all the different pieces and parts sort of fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
But here it's a figure of speech for people, and it can mean that you just sort of break down mentally or emotionally, that you feel like you can't go on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then rising up would be the opposite of that. Rising up would be to say that, yes, things are difficult and, you know, maybe I've had a lot of struggles in my life. Maybe I'm weaker right now than I was before, but, you know, I will rise up and try again and keep pressing on, keep going on.
You know, it's interesting to me that a lot of people who fall apart, sometimes it's not due to a problem with the mind. I mean, they don't have a chemical imbalance or manic depression, or perhaps they don't have a physical, physiological problem. But oftentimes it's self-pity. people fall apart because they say, you know, I try and I try and nobody will let me do it. And every time I try, it doesn't work out right. And so they just start to fall apart and they don't realize that the primary motivation factor in their success is in themselves. They've got to decide to rise up to the challenge and say, I can do this.
That's right.
Because I have the ability, I have the capability, I have the strength. It's a question of whether I choose to do that or not.
It's the act of the will. You
yeah.
choose to rise up. You choose not to fall apart.
That's right.
And I think sometimes if you are struggling with despair or wanting to give up, if you're starting to fall apart, it can be hard for you to see clearly and to be objective. And that's where one other person coming in can make a difference because they can be objective and they can point out to you, you know what? You're just feeling sorry for yourself here. But if you change your mind and choose to carry on, you know, you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. And that is, of course, the central subject or the idea in today's article is that you can make a difference. And now we're going to continue with today's reading as we begin looking at the first of three ways to make a difference.
Where there is gloom, bring hope. There are times when events come tumbling upon us and we lose hope. Be the person who plants seeds of hope in a despairing person's life. Stephen J. Lesko, Jr. tells of a Halloween when he brought his wife home from the hospital to live out her remaining days. Remembering that children would come by for trick-or-treat and realizing he was not prepared with any candy, he quickly gathered whatever he could find in the house. The first arrivals were three girls in their early teens. Mr. Lesko apologized for his poor treats, explaining he was not able to go get any because of his wife's illness. They thanked him and went off. A few minutes later, they returned and each girl gave him a handful of candy from their bags. Through his tears, he tried to return the candy, but the wonderful young ladies rushed off enthusiastically, saying, "We hope she gets well."
Wow. So we can see here at the top of the second column on page 25 in your Advanced magazine, it says, where there is gloom, bring hope. And I would say that gloom is probably contrasted here with, again, the idea of hope. Now, gloom is a sense of despair or a sense of depression that people might feel when they are low. And often this occurs, too, at wintertime or when it's cold outside, the weather's changing. People often will have a sense of gloom.
You might even say, I feel gloomy today, or the weather outside looks gloomy if it's cloudy and raining.
And sometimes people feel that way inside as well. And it says, there are times when events, Amy, come tumbling upon us. This word tumbling in the second column in line one, what do we mean by that?
Well, tumbling is another word for falling. And I think basically here when it talks about events tumbling upon you, that means that maybe a lot of very difficult or bad things happen to you all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It almost feels like these bad things are coming from above and hitting you in a way if a lot of them come at once.
And oftentimes when we talk about tumbling, it's with the idea that something is at the top or mm-hmm. above us and it's tumbling down. And so we lose hope. But it says, Esther, we can be the person who plants seeds of hope in a despairing person's life. To plant seeds, this is another, and it's an agricultural word.
Right. And here when we talk about plant seeds, we don't mean that you actually go out and plant seeds in a garden. We talk about saying words of encouragement or planting these thoughts or ideas in someone's mind or their heart.
I think in Chinese they say zhongzi, you know, to plant seeds in the ground. And yet we as human beings can also plant seeds in people's lives to bring hope.
I think here it basically just means that you're doing something small that will bring great rewards.
Hmm.
So just like if you literally physically plant a seed, you know, it's a tiny little thing, but it will bring forth flowers or fruits or vegetables or something. So here they're saying you can do something that's small in someone's life. In this case, give them words of hope, but it can bring great rewards in their life.
That's a good point. And I think we often look for the big things to make the difference when, in fact, in most cases, it's the little things that make the biggest difference in people's lives.
And sometimes when we plant seeds of hope or love, we might not even know it. People might tell us years later, you know, that one time you encouraged me, I felt so good. Or that one time you told me, you count. I felt like I could do it. I could keep going.
That's a good point, Esther. You know, as a man and as a father and as a husband, I've been told countless times, I've read it in many places, that women enjoy little things. In fact, they say we have a phrase, it's called, it's the little things that counts. Mm-hmm. It's not the big things you do for me, like buying me a computer or perhaps buying me a new car or this thing or that thing, but it's the little thing, such as when you see me in the morning, say good morning and tell me you love me today and open the door for me and take some time to talk to me. It's the little things. Give me a flower. Write me a card. So those things aren't expensive, are they?
No.
And yet they can make a big difference. Well, here, Victor goes on in line 5 to talk about this Stephen J. Lesko. And it was during a period of time, or a time that is celebrated, I guess, in the United States. Some of us don't celebrate Halloween because, personally, I feel that there are some things that go on that day that aren't so good. But it is a holiday. In fact, we have a small box there on page 25 that tells us a bit more about it, Amy. Would you read that for us?
Sure. Halloween is a holiday on the night of October 31st when children wear costumes, play tricks, and walk from house to house asking for candy. And usually they'll ring the doorbell and say, trick or treat, and then, you know, the people who live there will give them candy.
Mm-hmm. And so in this story, it was on that day, October 31st, and Stephen Lesko says he was bringing his wife home from the hospital to live out her remaining days, which simply meant that she would only live so many days before she would die.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, I mean, to me, this would bring despair into most people's lives, realizing that a person you loved, that you love, is going to die and die soon. And in fact, that's one of our vocabulary words, to live out one's days. And Esther, what is the definition of that phrase?
It means to continue to live in a particular way or place until you die. So someone may be living at home or living out their remaining days at home.
Mm-hmm. And some people might live out their remaining days at the hospital.
Mm-hmm. A retirement home.
Mm-hmm. So in this case, Stephen brought his wife home from the hospital to live out her remaining days. And then what did he remember, Amy?
He remembered that because it was Halloween, that children would be coming by for trick-or-treat. And he went, uh-oh, I don't have any candy in my house. He didn't have time to go out and get any, so he just gathered whatever he could find in the house.
Okay, because that is something that in the United States, during Hallow's Eve or Halloween, you know, it's kind of interesting. On those nights, when I lived in the States, we chose not to be home. We would always leave and go visit friends or something. But you've got these kids, and sometimes big kids, coming to your home, knocking on your door, asking for candy.
And it usually happens around 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, and it probably continues around 10 at night. So you have to supply lots of candy because lots of kids will come by.
Very true.
And so it says the first arrivals, or the first persons to his door, were these three girls in their early teens, probably 13, 14 years old. And then what does the story continue to say there, Esther?
He says that Mr. Lesko apologized for not having enough treats. A few minutes later, they returned. These girls came, and he only gave them a few candies, but they later came back and gave him candy.
Hmm. Wow, isn't that interesting? So he wasn't able to get out and buy treats to give to the children because he was busy thinking of his wife, getting her home from the hospital. And when he admitted that to these three girls, they did an intentional act of kindness. They wanted to make a difference in his life. And so they went out probably collecting candy from other homes, and they returned to his home, it says, to give him a handful of candy from their bags. And what was his response, Esther?
He was very touched. He began to cry because this is totally unexpected. Usually on Halloween, adults give kids candy and kids don't give adults candy. So he was very touched.
Yes. It's kind of like, I suppose, in Asian society, someone coming to your door and giving you a hongbao.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not a child. You're an adult. And typically, You know, during Chinese New Year, of course, we always give hongbaos to our children. We don't expect them to give a hongbao to us. So I can imagine how surprised he was to, you know, have these girls do this. And so he had these tears were in his eyes. He tried to return the candy. He wanted to give it back to them, but they wouldn't accept it. What did they do instead, Amy?
They rushed off enthusiastically, saying, "We hope she eats well." So apparently they had been touched when he explained that the reason he didn't have good treats was because his wife was very sick. And so, you know, I can just imagine that when they left his door the first time, one of them probably said, "Oh, that's so sad. What can we do for him? Can we do something to make him feel better?" And then I'm sure they had the idea, "I know, let's go get some other candy and go back and get it, give it to him."
It's amazing that, again, these were young teen girls. And the idea of giving candy to a man, you know, if someone were to give me candy, that's not a big deal. I don't eat candy typically, so it's not something I have to have or even something that I particularly want. But it was that to these girls, that candy was important. And yet they were willing to give it up. And he recognized that that candy for them was something of value. And so they were sharing that with him. And I think that was the element that caused the tears in his eyes.
And like these girls, we can also make a difference in the lives of other people. If you see someone who's lonely, maybe you can walk over and start talking to them. Or if someone looks sad, you can ask them, "Are you okay?" Sometimes it's just these little things we do that make a big difference.
Yes, it is. Well, let's finish with today's article by reading on page 26 at the top of the column through to the end of today's article.
"Looking back on those moments," Mr. Lesko says, "I do not know these beautiful young women, but I'd like them to know their simple act of kindness brought joy and hope to me when there was none. Even though my wife has since passed on, the memory of a sad time will be brightened by the thought of the kindness of these three angels."
Very good. So Mr. Lesko is reflecting. He's looking back on those moments. And what does he say, Amy?
He says that he doesn't know these beautiful young women, but he wants them to know that their simple act of kindness brought joy and hope to him when there was none. And even though his wife has passed on since then — passed on means to die, it's just kind of a polite and indirect way of saying to die — that when he remembers that sad time, you know, his memories are brightened by thinking of how these three girls, who he didn't even know, were so kind to him.
And when someone treats us in such a way, it also inspires us to go out and treat other people the same way.
That's right. And we can be beautiful both outside and inside, like these three girls.
So I think the reality is that all of us experience times of sadness. There are sad times in our lives. And it is the people around us who try to encourage us by doing acts of kindness, by telling us, you know, "Hey, you can make it." That individual becomes for us an important person in our lives because they're telling us, "You count."
That's right.
Yes.
And just last Friday when I felt down, Amy encouraged me. She sent me an email and she told me that you can do it. You're doing a good job.
This Amy right here?
This Amy right here. So she is making a difference in my life.
All right. So she helped to brighten your day, didn't
she? That's
right. And brighten your life. Well, at the end here, he calls these three young teens, these three young ladies, three angels. Is that a term someone might use to describe an individual?
Actually, it is. Sometimes if someone does something kind for someone else, they'll say, "Oh, you're an angel. Thank you so much." I have some friends who use that often.
Because angels, interestingly enough, at least I think within biblical literature, angels represent servants of God who are sent by God to do good things. And maybe that's the way Mr. Lesko felt, that these three ladies had actually been sent by God to do this act of kindness to brighten his day and maybe move him from despair to hope. Well, let's listen now to today's skit.
"Honey, I think there's someone at the front door."
"I'll get it, dear." Trick or treat!
My, look what we have here. And who might you three be?
We're the Powderpuff Girls!
I'm Blossom, she's Buttercup, and that's Bubbles.
Well, young ladies, I need to apologize. You see, I just brought my wife home from the hospital, and so I don't have any candy prepared for you. Let me take a quick look around and see if I can't find you something else, okay?
Okay!
Gee, that man seems really sad. It's too bad about his wife. I wonder if we can cheer him up.
Yeah, let's think of something to do.
Okay, I'm back. How about some apples? It's not candy, but it'll certainly be better for you when you're out fighting crime.
Great! Thanks a lot, mister. See you around.
Good night.
Hey, let's take some of our candy and give it to that man. That might cheer him up.
Yeah, good idea. Let's go back right now. Trick or treat!
Hey, haven't I seen you three before?
Hey, mister, we were thinking. Since you don't have any candy, we want you to have some of ours. So, here you go. And please, give some to your wife for us. We hope she gets well soon.
Well, thank you, ladies. I certainly will tell her. Good night.
Good night.
Wow. Now that, Skit, least expressed well for us what the article says here, that the three of those ladies did make a difference, and so they were kind of acting out what actually happened to Mr. Stephen Lesko. Well, tomorrow we're going to look at other points concerning how we can make a difference. So we hope, listeners, that you'll join us again on tomorrow's program. And until then, this is Troy.
This is Esther.
And Amy.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.